The following message is a presentation of Ligonier Ministries, home of the radio program Renewing Your Mind with R.C. Sproul.
In the world in which we live, we have two options for how we understand our lives and nature and everything around us. Two completely different systems of interpreting reality. On the one end of the spectrum, there is unvarnished atheism that categorically denies the existence of God. On the other end of the spectrum is the affirmation of full-orbed biblical theism. Now, between those two poles, there exist thousands of different philosophies and religions and systems of thought. But ultimately, everything in between borrows either from a view of God or from a view that discounts the reality of God. We live in a world that more and more and more assumes that there is no God. Our ethics, our politics, our economics, everything is conditioned by this idea that there's no one home in the universe and that everything that happens, happens by brute forces, impersonal, mechanical causes. And one of the words that is used again and again to describe this is the seemingly harmless word chance. The word chance is the word we use to describe accidents, luck, things that happen for no rhyme or reason. Now, the question I want to look at in our continuing study of providence is this: is there any such thing as chance? Because the very idea of chance in its most naked form is utterly incompatible with the existence of God. If God is sovereign, if God handles all things by His providence, then there can be no such thing as chance. Now, we use the word sometimes in a relatively harmless way. Recently, I was in Chicago, and I got off the train from somewhere and was going through the station because we had an 8-hour layover in the city, and it was during the early morning commuter rush. And as I was walking through Union Station in Chicago, a fellow came up and tapped me on the shoulder, and I turned around and I recognized him as somebody that I'd known a long time ago and hadn't seen in about 10 years. And he just happened to be there at that moment because he was on his way to work, and our paths converged. It was a coincidental meeting, what we call a chance encounter. He didn't intend to see me. I didn't intend to see him. Our paths crossed on that moment. So we enjoyed the brief moment of conversation and went about our business. We spent 8 hours then in downtown Chicago. Came back later in the day as we were going to board a train to Los Angeles around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Now it's the evening rush hour. And now again, as we're going in the opposite direction through Union Station, a fella comes up and taps me on the shoulder. I turn around, it's the same man. And I thought, what are the chances that I would have a chance encounter with this old friend twice in one day? Calculate the odds. I wouldn't want to bet on such a thing. Now, when we talk about chance in that harmless way of chance meetings, chance encounters, no harm done. But when we begin to say that His presence there was ultimately caused by chance and that my presence there was ultimately caused by chance, we have denied not only God, but rationality itself. Now, this is not a new problem. There's an episode in the Old Testament that I think gives a magnificent illustration and example of these two alternatives: a chance universe or a universe governed by God. It takes place in the latter days of the period of the judges, when Eli is now judging over Israel. And he's an old man. And the Jewish people are being harassed by the Philistines, their perennial enemies. And they engage in warfare with the Philistines. And in this battle, 4,000 Jews are killed. And so the soldiers come back in abject defeat and disconsolation. And they come to the judge. They come to Eli and they say, Eli, let us go back again into battle against the Philistines. But this time, let the priests carry the Ark of the Covenant, the sacred throne of Yahweh, that God might go before us in battle, that we might be victorious. And finally, Eli agrees to this, and the soldiers march into battle, taking with them the Ark of the Covenant. Now, Eli, being an old man, his eyes have become dim. He is grossly overweight and obese. He is seated in a chair by the city gate, and he waits breathlessly for some kind of report for the outcome of the battle. Finally, the battle is over, and this time the outcome is different. Not just a couple of thousand Jews are slain, but tens of thousands are destroyed. The Philistines have a crushing victory, and they capture the sacred throne of God, the Ark of the Covenant itself. And a messenger is dispatched to come back to the gate to give the report to Eli. Now when he comes, he has bad news. And he says, Eli, our armies have been defeated. Your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, have been slain on the field of battle. And there's no apparent reaction from Eli. And Eli then inquires of them and says, what about the ark? And the messenger replies and says, Eli, the ark has been captured and taken away by the Philistines. And we read that, and it came about that when he mentioned the ark of God, Eli fell off the seat backward beside the gate. And his neck was broken, and he died, for he was old and heavy, and he had judged Israel for 40 years. Eli dies, and now the scene changes to his daughter-in-law, the wife of Phinehas, who was pregnant and was ready to give birth, the scriptures tell us. And when she heard the news that the Ark of God was taken, and that her father-in-law was dead, that her brother-in-law was dead, and that her husband was dead, the scriptures say she kneeled down and gave birth, for her pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the women who stood by her said to her, do not be afraid, for you have given birth to a son. But she didn't answer them. The Bible said she didn't pay any attention to them. Instead, in her dying moments, she looked at the son she had borne, and she called his name Ichabod, saying, the glory has departed from Israel because the ark of God was taken. And she died. Ichabod. In Hebrew, the word kabod is the word that the Jewish people used to describe the majesty of God. It is the word that is translated by the English word glory. The glory of God is his kavod. This boy is given the name Ichabod, meaning the glory is gone. The glory has departed. This was a day that would live in infamy in Jewish history. But while all of the Israelites were in mourning at the loss of their leader, at the loss of the very throne of their God, at the loss of their sons in battle, it was a different story in Philistia. The Philistine soldiers were celebrating, and Philistia was a city of five great cities, each one ruled by a great king. And so the Ark of God was taken back to the city of Ashdod, one of the principal cities of the Philistines. And it was taken to Ashdod because there in Ashdod was the great sanctuary, the great cathedral that the Philistines had built in honor of their god, Dagon. And the spoils of their victory over the Jews, the Ark of the Covenant, was taken into the temple of Dagon and placed at the feet of a statue to their pagan god. Placed in a position of subordination, in a position of humiliation, where the great god Dagon looking down his nose at the throne of Yahweh. And after this, they went out into the town and celebrated the whole night. The next morning, when the priests came in to their cathedral to attend to the sanctuary, they were horrified to see that during the night, some natural perturbation had occurred, some accident of fate had happened by which the statue, the image of Dagon, had fallen over on its face and was now lying prostrate beneath the throne of God. Well, they didn't want that word to get out. They carefully righted the statue anew and propped it up to make sure that this calumny would never happen again, and went on about their business. The next morning, when they came into the temple, this time the statue of Dagon had not only fallen over, but had smashed at the feet of the Ark of God. Now, at the same time, by chance, by coincidence, a plague broke out in the city, accompanied by a radical infestation of rats, rats everywhere. Rats crawling in the marketplace, coming into the houses, rats everywhere. And this terrible plague that was destroying the population of Ashdod, some scholars look back and see this as perhaps an outbreak of the bubonic plague with its tumors and its quick and certain death. And so somebody in the city of Ashdod began to think about this and said, maybe this isn't a coincidence. Maybe this disaster and this calamity, this catastrophe that has befallen our city is because we had made light of the throne of the Jewish God. And so they shipped the ark over to the next Philistine city. And no sooner did the ark arrive there than the plague arrived there and the rats arrived there. And for months now, the kings of the Philistines played musical ark. They shipped it from one king to the next and from one city to the next. And everywhere the ark went, the plague went. And utter devastation befell the Philistines. And so finally, the kings of the nation held a summit meeting. And they gathered together and they said, what are we going to do about this? One of them said, this must be the judgment of the God of Israel upon us. Let's send the ark back. It's not worth it. And another one said, well, that's a good idea. Let's go ahead and send the ark back, but we can't just send it back empty. We have to send a trespass offering with it. So they concocted a plan to send the Ark of the Covenant back to the Jewish nation, filled with 5 golden tumors and 5 golden rats. That was the trespass offering. That was the booty, the ransom that they were going to pay to avert the wrath of God. But even now, they're still not convinced for sure that the judgment that had fallen upon them had come from the hand of God. They were still musing about the possibility that it all was an accident, a bare coincidence. Listen to how the scriptures tell us of this story. We read that they discussed these matters together and came to this conclusion. Now, therefore, take and prepare a new cart with 2 milk cows on which there's never been a yoke, and hitch the cows to the cart, take their calves home away from them, and take the Ark of God and place it on the cart, and put the articles of gold which you return to him as a guilt offering in a box beside it, and then just send it away. And watch. If it goes up by way of its own territory to Beth Shemesh, then he has done this great evil. But if not, then we will know that it was not his hand that struck us, but that it happened to us by chance. These so-called pre-scientific unsophisticated people in the ancient world decided to devise an experiment, an empirical experiment. We're going to test this. Let's get two milk cows that have never been yoked before. We'll turn them into oxen. We'll remove them from their offspring so that their natural inclination will be to move in the direction of their calves. But we'll just let them go. We won't drive them. Nobody will lead them. Nobody will guide them. We'll just put the cart on and put the trophies there, the trespass offering and the ark of God, and let them loose, see what happens. Now, if they go to Israel, if they go across the border, if they take the ark of God back to Israel, then we will know that all of our calamities, all of our suffering has been by the hand of God. Because only God could lead these cows who by nature would go directly towards their calves. Only God would direct them against nature, contra naturam, by special providence would God take them to Israel. And if they don't go, then we'll know that the whole thing has taken place by chance. So what happened? The test of providence versus no providence. The test of God or chance. The men did as they were told. They took the two milk cows, hitched them to the cart, and shut up their calves at home. And they put the ark of the Lord on the cart and the box with the golden mice and the likenesses of their tumors. And the cows took the straight way in the direction of Beth Shemesh. They went along the highway, lowing as they went, and did not turn aside to the right or to the left. What an incredible story. I have a friend who has his PhD in cows. I didn't know it was possible to have a PhD in cows, but he does. And he tells me all kinds of interesting stories about the behavioral patterns of cows. And I asked him once, I said, what does it mean here that the cattle were lowing? I was thinking when I first read this text that what it meant was that they were in perfect peace because I was influenced by the words of Away in a Manger, a Christmas song. The cattle are lowing. The poor baby sleeps. I'm thinking that this is a time of great domestic tranquility. And so I kind of like to think that the cows were going to their destination singing. But my friend with a PhD corrected my false assumption there. He said, no. He said, this means they were crying. That the cows were distressed. They were going in a way they didn't want to go. They wanted to go to their babies. But nevertheless, these dumb brutes followed the guidance of God. The scriptures say they went straight to their destiny. They didn't turn to the left or to the right. Does that remind you of anything in New Testament history about a sheep that was sent to the slaughter? Set his face steadfastly toward Jerusalem. Turn neither to the left or to the right. A one who on his back bore the ultimate guilt offering for us. So the cows went obeying the providence of God. And we read, and the people of Beth Shemesh were reaping their wheat harvest in the valley. They raised their eyes, saw the ark, and rejoiced to see it. And the cart came to the field of Joshua the Beth Shemite and stood there where there was a large stone. And right there where the cows stopped on the stone, the people removed the Ark of the Covenant. They unhitched the cart. They broke up the cart into firewood and placed the wood underneath the cows and offered them as a burnt sacrifice to God. For the throne of God was established anew in Israel. Not by chance, but by providence. In our Coram Deo thought for today, I remind you again of what we have seen with respect to the use of the word chance. It's a perfectly good word to describe mathematical possibilities, as I've said. But so often, beloved, we who profess to believe in God belie that profession when we talk about things taking place by chance. Again, I think our deepest problem in the church today is with our understanding of the character of God. If God is truly sovereign, if God truly governs this universe and everything is in it, then nothing ever, ever happens by chance. And to attribute events to chance in an ultimate way is to place a shadow over the very glory of God. The God of the Bible is not a God of chance.
For more information about Ligonier Ministries, call 1-800-435-4343. Or contact us on the web at ligonier.org. That's ligonier.org. Or write P.O. Box 54, 7500, Orlando, Florida, 32854.